Welcome to Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group, and author of Headlines.
Hello, everybody. This week we have two guests subsequent to each other. We have Rabbi Binyamin Ginsberg. He's a noted author and educator and an expert in chinuch. He's written many svarim about chinuch, bringing up our children and education. After that, we will have Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, who's the dean and founder of Yeshiva Darkei Noam in Muncie, as well as the founder of Project Yes. And the topic will be children at risk. Do we keep them at home? How do we deal with them? And Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz will discuss, what are the signs? How do we know if a child is being molested, is having some other problem, some other stress in his life? What should a parent look for? You could listen to us at WMCA 570 on the AM dial or WMCA.com online, or on the Nachum Segal Network at NachumSegal.com. It's played both 11 to 12 Matzah Shabbos and a replay on Nachum Segal 11 to 12 on Monday morning. You can send in your questions to questions@headlinebook.com. Questions@headlinebook.com. Well, thank you very much, everybody, and welcome, Rabbi Ginsberg.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
So, Rabbi Ginsberg, I know you've authored many books. You've authored Today You Will Live, A Principal's Principle, You Asked, all dealing with bringing up our children. So here's a question that many parents sadly struggle with. Let me start. What is the major cause for children going off the derech, or in general, kids at risk?
That will be debated until children stop going off the derech. There's so many different factors. In my experience, the greatest two factors are that they see hypocrisy in the adults in their life, and number two is they're not exposed to an authentic appreciation for Yiddishkeit.
Interesting. Let me ask you, there was something that's very actively mentioned all the time, and that is molestation. Do you believe that's a key component?
I think emotional molestation, definitely. I think, you know, for the children who are, put it this way, I don't know a child who is physically molested who doesn't go off the derech.
It's 100% at that point.
I would say close to it.
Wow.
But there are many other reasons that children go off the derech. That means that is not, when we see a child who's off the derech, we should not make that assumption that he was physically abused.
When you say emotional molestation, could you define that?
You know, children being destroyed verbally, being given the message that they don't have value in this world, their self-esteem is shot, they're told that they're failures and they won't be able to achieve what they want. They're motivated to achieve. Every human being has motivation to be a success. We confuse that and we say that they're not motivated. They're totally motivated, but there are things along the way that destroy that motivation.
And do you think that's primarily parents, or would you say it's peers? Would you say it's teachers? Is it all of the above? Can you put a zip code on that, abuse?
I would say it's more the adults in their life than the children.
And the adults, meaning, could you quantify that a little better?
I think there is no distinction. It can be parents, it can be teachers. Every case is different, and it's tough to say where the majority lies. I mean, of all the children I come in contact with who are struggling, I couldn't say there was a greater majority in one way or the other.
Now, curious, can one parent amend what the other parent damages? is koyach the hetera adif, or is fakert? Is koyach the hezeka adif? Is it easier to damage or easier to amend, or is it sort of a push?
One of the greatest challenges is when a child sees that the parents are not on the same page. So the child who's being comforted by one parent for the mistreatment of the other parents is not always going to solve the problem. The child gets very confused because the adults in his life who he's supposed to look up to are not on the same page.
And that affects self-esteem.
Oh, tremendously. It's a very confusing factor in their lives.
So let's go to the gravamen of this question. When a child is at risk, would you keep him at home or send him away?
I would make every effort to keep him at home. I would go through tremendous loops and hoops to keep him at home. There's been a debate, unconditional love. Are there times when unconditional love is not there? I don't believe there is such a thing that it should be conditional love. A child is a child, and it has to be a natural instinct for the parent to love the child. There are times when there are major interventions needed, whether the child is really emotionally unbalanced and that can cause either direct harm to him or to others. And those are times where we don't throw out the child. We just may have to get him into a different environment. But never the message that you don't belong here, that we don't love you and we're throwing you out. That is not the word we should be using. We may have to find another living environment for that child, possibly even institutionalized in the mental health facility or some rehab program. But let's not use the word we're throwing you out.
I have a raya for you from maybe Al Pidrush, but I want to suggest the following raya. It says, Lasid Lavai, the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to come to the office and he's going to say, Banecha Chatu. So Avram will say, Yimachal Kedishimecha, and Yaakov will say, and Yitzhak will say, Pal Galai, Pal Galach. He will be the one who mitigates and finds a reason to farachamim, which is a little bit strange because Yitzhak is din. But here's the question. Yitzhak keeps Esav at home. And many people say Esav fooled Yitzhak. And I think that's a little problematic. I mean, we daven every day, three times a day, Elikei Avram, Elikei Yitzhak. Are we saying that Yitzhak Avinu was so gullible, he was naive, he was foolish? Isn't that a little bit missing in Kavod Avos?
Definitely.
Let me just finish my point, Rabbi Ginsburg. And my suggestion to that would be is Yitzchak's attitude was, I created it, I broke it, I own it. I made him, I own him. That's din. Din says you created him, you're responsible for him. And you see that we find in the second bracha of Shemoneh Esrei, which is Yitzchak Avinu, Mechalkil Chaim. Why is Parnasa come into din? And the Maral in Baba Basra says, because he says, where it says that somebody who lends money, who feeds a poor person, is doing Hashem's job, a malva dal is chaynin l'kadosh baruch hu. Maral says, because the Rabbeinu Shalom created us, he's supposed to feed us. So if you feed an ani, you are doing God's job, because you created it, you own it. And I think that a parent, that's what... You broke it, you own it. He's your child, you're responsible. That's what we learned from Yitzchak. Would you think that's a good analogy?
Very good. And yet we see from Avram, who's Midas Chesed, and the focus on Ava, and that shows clearly he understood that he had a problem sending Yishmael away. He needed the direct instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Kol Asher Tem L'Chasar Shema B'Kela. He had to see that even the mother's instinct had to be followed in this case. A mother who's much more traditionally of a softer person. In this case, he had to listen because it was against the teva.
So let me give you some questions that listeners have sent in, okay? Here's a from Chaim from Flatbush. I have a son who's off the derech, and we have made every effort to keep him at home. My wife has literally become sick from it. My son does drugs, he smokes. My wife has so much aggravation, she can barely get out of bed. At what point do I say that her health comes before his?
It can't be a choice, his or her. They both have to be dealt with. One of the questions that has to be asked at the first moment is, why is the mother in such pain? Unfortunately, I found that in many instances, the embarrassment, the shame of family and friends sometimes causes that pain to the parents. If that's the case, it's very, very obvious that the child's pain comes before the mother's, or in any case, even the father's. I think it's easier to help the mother overcome and deal with her pain than it is the child. We have to understand that the child who's in trouble is in tremendous, tremendous pain. They may try to hide it. They may act very cool and macho. That, you know, nothing is wrong. I'm at the top of the world, and Torah and mitzvahs mean nothing to me, etc. They may put on that persona, that face, but they're in tremendous, tremendous pain, and that is something that has to be dealt with. And if it's a question of where I'm going to focus, I would focus on the child, because if I can help the child, ultimately I'll be helping the mother too.
So what would you advise this gentleman, Chaim, who says his wife cannot get out of bed because of the grief of what her son is doing?
She probably needs professional help, number one. She has to be comforted very, very strongly by her husband that this is not, in all likelihood, a fault of hers. And if it is, then she has to do some din v'chesed and possibly rectify and take away the issue that she has caused. But in all likelihood, it is not the fault of hers, and that's what the husband has to reinforce and to impress upon her, that we need every bit of energy to help our child. Now is not the time to sulk.
Okay, here's a question from Naomi from Cedarhurst. I have three children, and one of whom is off the derech. A psychologist that I've gone to, and this has been backed up by my local machanach, has said, you must have rules at home. It cannot be a zoo. If your child does not want to live within a certain parameter of rules, he should be sent away from home. Do you agree or disagree?
There are two separate questions. Should there be parameters? Yes. Should it be presented that if you don't meet those, you will be thrown out of the house? No. The bigger question is, what happens with the other children at home who are, Baruch Hashem, you know, doing what the parents want them to do? I think the parents have to do the very, very important job in dealing with those other children. And the general message has to be, you know what, I may have to treat your sibling differently than I'm treating you. And if Chas V'Shalom you would be in that boot, I would do the same for you. That is my job as a parent. And set up certain parameters in which the influence will not be there, and to constantly check in on that and allow the children to express their hurt, because siblings are also hurt when in this situation. They're embarrassed amongst their friends. They're scared to bring home classmates into their home. And these are issues that the children, the siblings, have to be dealt with. But I believe there has to be guidelines. They have to be established not at the moment when it's happening. That means when a child is, you know, is texting on Shabbos in front of his sibling, that is not the time to set down the guidelines. It has to be at a time when everybody is peaceful. They can sit down and say, you know, we love you, we want you here. Let's make this work for all of us. Let's not use the word rules.
So I have a question. Moshe, he says, I'm a health professional from Lakewood. Sadly, there are many children here that are off the derech.
Parents are terrified about the impact it has on other children in the family. Who comes first, this one child or the other six children who are being negatively mushba by this child?
It's not a question of who comes first. We have a responsibility to each and every child of us equally. As in, the question has to be, what can we do to minimize the negative influence and possibly even create it into a positive situation for the other siblings, for them to understand what it means to treat a sibling, what pain means, what it means to be supportive, why it's so important to follow Torah mitzvahs, because if you start bending here, look what happens, chas v'shalom. I would not create a situation where it becomes a choice, this child or my other sibling.
So is there any situation that you would absent where the child will obviously harm himself, that you would condone sending a kid away?
Oh, definitely. Definitely we should send the child, but I wouldn't use the word throwing them out. I would simply say, now is not the time for you to be at home, and we'll do whatever we can to make it possible for you to get back as soon as possible. We love you. Constantly that message has to come across verbally and in action and in attitude. But now is not a good time for all of us for you to be here.
And at what point would you say, like, when does that speech happen? Like, how would you put the parameters around that?
I don't think there should be a set guideline when that happens. I think each situation has to be dealt with differently. If, for example, the parent has done whatever is suggested to avoid the influence on the other children, and it's not happening, that would be a situation that would possibly call for having the child take a break from being at home. If, for example, there is Chillul Shabbos in front of the sibling, every case has to be dealt with differently, and we also have to look in how long has this been going on, what's the age of the child, what will happen, you know, what are we providing for the child who can't be at home? You know, possibly if we can send them to a grandparent or another relative, that would minimize the question of sending them away from home. It would make it much easier for the parents to feel better that this is the temporary arrangement we have to make, where the child still feels that he's part of the family, he just can't be at home at the moment.
So here's a question. We're speaking to Rabbi Binyamin Ginsberg, noted author and educator, about children at risk and how to deal with them. Rabbi Ginsberg, here's a question. Pinchas from Borough Park. Should a parent allow his off-the-derech child to bring friends home? And alternatively, should they be allowed to go to the homes of other children who are off-the-derech? God knows what happens at these parties.
The first one is much easier than the second. The first one is it's the parent's home, and the parent does not have the achrayus that they have to their children, to their children's friends. And as much as we should keep our children at home, that is our children, but that should not go into the siblings, into their friends. Just like, you know, I don't want to touch too much on this issue, but the big debate is, chas v'shalom, what happens if a child intermarries? So one of the common approaches is that the child who intermarried is still welcome into their home, but their spouse is not, because the spouse is not the child. And the same thing would be over here. The child's friend doesn't have the responsibility to be treated by his friend's parents the way his child should be treated. The child who's off the derech, we are very limited in what we can do, you know, which house and which friend he can go to. I think that's going to be a much greater challenge. Who's going to come into our house is much easier.
But wouldn't it be considered by the child a rejection if we don't allow his friends in?
It depends how it's explained to him. And on the contrary, it could be a reinforcement of the parents' love for this child, saying, you're my child, and therefore I'm going to accept you in any way, shape, or form. But that's one thing that makes you so special, is because you are the one who I will let do what you are doing, but not your friends.
Fascinating. We're speaking to Rabbi Binyamin Ginsberg, a noted author and lecturer. He wrote A Principle's Principle. He's written You've Asked, and most recently, The Nesivos Shalom, a translation into English. Rabbi Ginsberg, in your opinion, how much influence does a Rebbe in a class have on the boys? And what impact have you seen that have an impact, a negative impact, on children going off the derech? And the reason I ask is because I have a note here from a boy. His name is Yoel. He grew up in Williamsburg, and he said, what I saw in yeshiva caused me to go off the derech. The rabbeim and what they taught, etc. What is your opinion of that?
I would like to turn the question around a little bit. To me, it is a greater wonder that we don't have many more children going off the derech. And I think the Rebbe, the Mara, should question, what can I do in my classroom that will minimize the risks of all of my students? Again, we don't want to get into the blaming the situation, but there are definitely things going on in some classes, and let's underline some, that are definitely causing part of the problem. But I think every time a Rebbe wants to do anything to a child, they have to ask themselves the question, is this the proper approach of how to deal with this child? Now, we have a huge challenge going on because in some situations, both parents and teachers are hesitating in doing what they should be doing for the child. Out of the thing is, the child may even verbalize, if you do this to me, I'm going to go off the derech. And that causes a tremendous responsibility for the teacher to know when that is the appropriate step or not. We have to look back at history. And there's a very, very critical story that should give us a lot of information of how to deal with these children, which happened when Chazay Nish set up a yeshiva in Bnei Barak, and he hired a Rosh Yeshiva. And at a certain time, the Rosh Yeshiva found a bachur who was smoking on Shabbos, and he threw him out of the yeshiva. Chazay Nish called him in and said, how can you do that? So he says, come on, he's smoking on Shabbos. So Chazay Nish said, did you assemble a bezin of 23? It's pikuach nefesh. How can you throw this child out? So the Rosh Yeshiva said, come on, it's my yeshiva. You hired me. Let me do what I have to. So the Chazay Nish said, listen, now it's a question of whether you have a right for the job or not. Now it's a question of dinei mamonos, financial issue. For that, you only need a bezin of 3, with the exception, if it's a mumcha, the dayan is a mumcha, then you only need 1.
And I'm a mumcha, he said, the Chazay Nish.
Exactly, and I'm not keeping you as a Rosh Yeshiva. So, you know, the responsibility is we're dealing with pikuach nefesh over here. And I think we have to focus on what we can do to minimize or even totally eliminate this problem. The Rebbe has a tremendous, tremendous ability to do that.
So in closing, Rabbi Binyamin, if you had to give us 3 bullet points for parents in dealing with children at risk, what would they be?
Prevention. Create an atmosphere with the simchas achayim in the home, even when there are challenges. Don't respond with a gut reaction. Take every situation and think it through. And the most important part is, I think as a whole, we are losing sight of the fact what the Gemara says, Shloisha Shutvin Ba'adam. We have a third partner in helping us. When we daven to Hashem, my words should not be, Hashem, help me with my child, I'm having a problem. The words should be, Hashem, help me with our child. And if with sincere tefillah and counting and putting some of the responsibility on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can do a lot for our children. We're ignoring the power of tefillah.
Well, thank you very much. That was Rabbi Yamin Ginsberg, the author of A Principle's Principle, You Asked, and recently the Nesiva Shalom in English, noted author and educator. Thank you so much, Rabbi Ginsberg. We have with us Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, the Dean of Yeshivas Darkei Noyam in Muncie. Additionally, he's the founder of Project Yes and one of the preeminent experts in Chinuch here in America. Welcome, Rabbi Horowitz.
Hi, good to be with David. Shavuot Tov. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Welcome to all your listeners.
Thank you. Rabbi Horowitz, a question. In your opinion, what is the crux of the reason why children become at risk?
That's like asking, like, what's the meaning of life? It's a very complex question. I think it's helpful to think about it in terms of when you say the term at risk, you know, children who abandon religion or have diminished observance level, and children who aren't functioning, period, in any sphere of life. I think it's very important to distinguish between the two. When we lump them all together, it tends to really blur some of the important issues. In other words, when you're talking about an at-risk kid, a child who's using cocaine or heroin or getting into very self-destructive habits, not performing at all in school or any venue of life, is one issue, and it's an entirely different issue when you have a child who's functioning and doing well and just has difficulty with religion. Which one are you talking about? And I'll give you some thoughts.
I would say children who go off the derech, who become irreligious.
Okay, so, there are a variety of reasons. There is no one reason why children abandon religion. Some of it has to do with lack of inspiration. Some of it has to do with life situations and home situations that are very challenging to them. They grow up with a sense of unhappiness. But there really isn't one predictor. A lot of it has to do with schooling, with parents. Level of acceptance and tolerance. I meet parents all the time, and you can usually tell pretty well in the first meeting with parents if the children are going to survive the teenage phase in a healthy way.
Rabbi Horowitz, if you had to give us the three bullet points, I know you've seen hundreds or maybe thousands of cases of this in your career as a mechanach, but if you had to say reason number one, reason, and assuming that there are a myriad of reasons and there are many iterations and nuances to each one, but just to give a general rubric A, B, and C, what would they be?
So at the overall, I think the greatest danger, if you're thinking, think of it like you would think of writing an insurance policy, you know, what are the risks? By far and above, it would be the issue of trauma, meaning at the extreme end, abuse or even to a lesser extent, but corporal punishment, the very harsh environment, an unhappy home life. These are all huge, huge predictors of children, what we call going off the derech. A lack of flexibility, when children have a home that's just a happy place to be in, it's a very positive impact on their lives. When the homes are stressful, parents are generally, most families to some one degree or another, have a child or two that really challenge them. you know, some of them, some kids are just rule followers. They, you know, you tell them what to do, and they're basically just comfortable following instructions. And then you have a child who's an out-of-the-box thinker, does their own thing, doesn't like taking instructions from anyone. And they typically have challenges in school, and they have challenges everywhere. Look at all the entrepreneurs that dropped out of elementary school or high school. School rewards...
conformity.
Children, conformity, people who are organized, who can file. You know, when you're older, you can have a secretary remind you of your appointments and hand you a paper with the next thing you need in your day. I'm telling you, David, a very decent percentage of kids who aren't making it in school would do just fine if they had a secretary following them around.
You know, you say out-of-the-box thinkers. So would it be interesting to say that many of those who go off the derech are indeed the more brighter or maybe in a way, you know, more inquisitive, actually
absolutely,
more entrepreneurial?
Sure. Especially in those who are performing well in other areas of their lives. Again, I wrote this over 10 years ago, people thought I lost my mind, that the kids who are in heavy, dangerous, destructive behavior, I wrote that over three quarters of them were molested or had some other sort of tremendous trauma in their lives. And, you know, the number is really much higher than that. It's a higher percentage than that. I go into any organization that deals with kids who are substance abusers or suicide attempts, virtually an extraordinary percentage of them are molested. But the quieter ones that go off the derech, that are not engaged religiously, are very often inquisitive, thoughtful, thinkers. They want to know the reasons why things are the way they are. And depending on the flexibility, talent, wisdom of the teachers or the adults in their life, their parents, whether they get those questions answered properly has a lot to do with how they evolve religiously. So if their questions are silenced or the environment is such where a kid can't say, hey, whoa, did the Mabul really happen? When children cannot pose these questions, they remain unanswered in their minds. And therefore, as they get older, the questions don't go away. They're just unasked. An unasked question is an unanswered one. So, yeah, it definitely is the case that in my experience, I would say that a very significant percentage of kids are the creative, artistic type that do think out of the box. It's interesting, if you look at the Baal Tshuva movement, people who have become observant, haven't grown up in non-observant homes, you have a very high percentage of graphic artists, writers, you know, creative people, because they're thinkers and that's the way they're wired. The challenge is, of course, that in the DNA, that their own children are going to grow up very awesome with those personalities, and therefore it's important that they place them in schools and have the type of home where children can be honest and speak what's on their mind.
You know, there's a famous thought from Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, which many people have criticized, where he says about Yaakov and Esav, it says Vayigdalu Hanarim, and he says in one, Esav went Lera and Yaakov went Latov, and he says you see no difference in the chinuch. So why is
younger,
it?
Right?
He says, "Why is it that yes?" By Yigdalu, he says, "Why is it that Esav went out the road? A Torah does not give us any difference in the way they were dealt with by their parents." And Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch says, "The reason why he says is because there was no difference in their chinuch." And he says, "And you can't have two children, and one has a question, and one doesn't have a question, and you can't treat them both alike. Each one has their own needs, and the minute where needs are not met, they come out and it's like a boil. It just begins to bubble and bubble, and finally it comes out in a very ugly way. And he was criticized for sort of ascribing to the fact that you could even look at the Avos Chinuch and sort of criticize it. But this, he writes this in the
Sefer. I got to tell you, David, it's true. I got to tell you, David, I never said that Avsham Shneur Fal Hirsch in public. Because it's a mouthful. I mean, you know, it's true. The Torah did not cover up misdeeds or shortcomings of our greatest people, and I think there's a lesson in that too, that to let us know that we all have shortcomings, and the fact that when we have shortcomings, that doesn't stop us from becoming great people. Yeah, but I've never said that Rosh Hashanah for Hashem public, but it's true, that's what he said. In fact, if I may add, he adds something more than that. His thought is, why do we need to know about Esav? What function does that serve? Why do we need to know about this? And he said to teach parents that when you take an Esav, who was an Ish Sadeh, it doesn't say he was a murderer. It just says he was a man of the field. And to put him in a setting with Yaakov is going to be a disaster.
So we had a question here from a listener in Flatbush, and he said, we have a child that is off the derech, and my wife has become ill from it, to the point where she literally stays in bed all day and cries. I think it would be healthier for the home environment if the kid was sent away. What is your opinion of that?
Absolutely not. I am very opposed to that. I think it's a whole host of reasons. I don't know if you're readers are interested. I wrote a piece in Mishpacha magazine. Should we keep, again, if someone does a Google search, Yaakov Horowitz, I would encourage your readers, if they are interested, if they have faced with this dilemma, or if they're just inquisitive about it, should we leave our off-the-derech child at home? You can look it up on my website or just do a Google search for my name in that piece. And I feel very strongly that children who are no longer observant or are having difficulty with religion definitely should be kept home. I think the mother and I think both parents should go for help. It is a very challenging thing to raise, to have a child reject your values, especially in our world where religion is, you know, where every bar mitzvah or everything you say, we should have Yiddish nachas, right? And it's heartbreaking for parents. But it's an issue that means the parents are having the challenge dealing with it. The issue, sending the child away is not the answer. That's not what the child needs. It's not what the family needs. You know, I wrote in the piece. I wrote a number of reasons why I think. I mean, one of them is what's the message to the other children? The message to the other children is that your love and your status in this house is conditional upon your acceptance of religion. Well, why is the other way around then? That means if your love is conditional, why shouldn't the child say that my love for you is conditional? It's a terrible message. If you want something fascinating, you talk about the avos. Look at that. It struck me so powerfully. Yitzchak has Yaakov and Esav. Esav wants to kill Yaakov. So who do you say? Who do you throw out of the house?
Right, and it says that he sends away Yaakov, not
He sends away Yaakov. He leaves Esav at home. I think his thinking was, listen, Yaakov will be fine. Esav needs me. Isn't it stunning? Look at what they did. I heard a beautiful verse from PG, our mutual friend, Rabbi Das Pinchas Waxman from Lakewood. He said a beautiful verse. It says, I actually wrote it at the end of that piece. It says, That when the Jews will sin, Hashem is going to go to Avram and say, "B'mechachatu, your children have sinned," and Avram's going to say, "So punish them." And he'll go to Yaakov and he'll say, "Also punish them." He'll go to Yitzchak and Yitzchak says, "You know, I'll split it with you. You take half, I'll take half. Let's pray for them." So I can't recall offhand what Vart he told me on, you know, who he told it from, but the quote was that the Yitzchak, the question was, again, why was Yitzchak the one to defend the Jews? And Yitzchak was Midas Hadin. Yitzchak was the harsh one. Avram was the super kind person. And so Yitzchak, Avram was chesed. So Yitzchak should have been the one to complain. And he said that the pshat was, he said that Yitzchak, that Avram had Yishmael. He threw him out, he sent him away. And Yaakov wasn't tested with this. He didn't have, it was Mitas Shleimo. All of his children, you know, more or less were, you know, stayed on the derech. And but Yitzchak did. So Yitzchak turns to God and he says, hey, I had Esav, and I kept him close to me. So the Chibanahim, Loi Banecha, to your children. I kept my Yoki Gyoz Hashem. Don't destroy. He's the one that was in the position to be a defender of the Jewish people because he himself did not send away his own child. So it's not helpful for the child to send them away, certainly. It's not helpful. I don't think it's helpful for the rest of the family. Unless the children are absolutely rebellious and undermine authority or are abusive to the other children, that's something that's a question. Then they, you know, I wouldn't say no situation should children be sent away, but there are exceptions. But I think parents need to go for help to learn to be able to deal with the disappointment.
We're speaking to Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, who's the founder of Yeshivas Darkei Noyim and the founder of Project Yes. Rabbi Horowitz, would you say then that practically under no situation, except where they're undermining authority, children should not be sent away? Is that your opinion, like to keep the
absolutely.
Child?
Absolutely, yes, that is my opinion. Absolutely. You know, parents often say that child is going to undermine the rest of the family. Other kids are going to... I wrote it in the piece there. I have not found this to be contagious.
That's because this goes contrary to a lot of the, let's say, the mechanchim. You have entire institutions like Arnava, which are basically housing homeless children that were sent away by their parents so as not to threaten the rest of the children at home. Basically, these parents are making a grave error.
I believe so, yes. I think they're making a terrible error. And listen, it's easy for me to say, but I'm telling you, this is what I found to work. It is not helpful to send those children away. I'm telling you, for any one of a host of reasons, it's not good practice. It doesn't help anything. You know, I heard a brilliant line from someone just last week. Where the line goes, wherever I go, there I am. Okay, wherever I go, there I am. We make mistakes in our lives. We make interpersonal mistakes. We make mistakes in investments and business. And in any area of our life, we make bad mistakes. And very often, we don't own up to the fact that there's a shortcoming in us that led us to do this. And we think that, a person starts a business, the business doesn't go. And they made mistakes. So they said, you know what, I'm going to drop this business, we'll declare bankruptcy, I'll start a new business. They usually wind up very often doing the same things if they didn't learn from their mistakes. So very often when parents say, look at this kid, our oldest son, two other kids went off the derech, maybe it's because the parents haven't changed. Why? It's very often it's easiest to blame on the most rebellious child, but maybe it's an issue in their parenting that they should be changing. Rather than sending the child away. Wherever I go, there I am.
Rabbi Horowitz.
So, you know, it's...
Yeah, go continue, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, continue.
Right, so the first reason you would say, the primary reason is trauma, some type of unhappy environment, stressful home, no simcha sachaim in the home.
Undiagnosed learning disability.
So would that be number two? Like, give me number two. This was number one. What would be number two?
You mean you're listing all of those as number one?
Well, so I'm trying to get one, two, and three. I have an accounting background, so this is, I have to do things in a particular way.
Okay. Trauma would be number one. Rigidity, school rigidity, and trauma includes abuse, corporal punishment, and I'm rolling all of that in into one. Abuse, corporal punishment, just a very non-nurturing environment. I would say that would be number one.
Can I interrupt? Before you go on to number two, you have a lot of parents listening. How would a parent know if a child was abused by another child or Rebbe? What symptoms should a parent look for? so that they can sort
of... That's a great question. So I would say, when parents see things in children, I'll step back a little bit and deal with it in a broader context. My philosophy has been, you know, for the last, I've been blessed to be in Chinuch and Jewish education for 33 years. And for the first 15 of them, I taught the weakest track in the school. I volunteered to teach an 8 days class. And what allowed me to look in the children and see potential was I always operated on the assumption that there's an answer key. When you see children or adults doing things, there's usually a reason. There's an answer. There's always a reason. There's an answer key. You just got to figure it out. You have to figure out what the answer key is. So I think that's how I encourage parents to think of it that way. So when you see children, especially if it's a sudden change, all of a sudden they become violent. They become very angry. They say things like, I'm never going back to school. I'm never going back to so-and-so's house. They get very clingy. They wet their beds if they haven't before. You see extreme rage, anger, self-destructive behavior. You know, so this usually an answer key. So that's what that means. You do a Google search online and you look at what you know, what the symptoms are. Those are the symptoms: profound anger, lack of, you know, part of abuse. It's not only about the sexual component. It's about not being in control and having someone dominate your life. That lack of control over one's own life it destroys their ability to function. I will also encourage your listeners to do a Google search for Abraham Maslow, M-A-S-L-O-W, who has a theory called a hierarchy of needs that talks about the levels of needs that people have. And he considers them to be sequential. And safety is the second of 5 levels, meaning if you don't have safety in your life, if you don't feel safe, it's not possible to go to level 3, which is family, socialization, love. 5 is self-actualization, which we say in Yiddish means to steig, to really grow. And when a child doesn't feel, I mean, listen, David, if you or I were driving in a really bad neighborhood, our car broke down, and we'd be afraid for our lives, we would not have the bandwidth to have, we're both good friends, right? If you called me when my car was broken down in a horrible neighborhood and I was afraid for my life, I would hang up on you. I wouldn't take the call. I can't have a friendly conversation when my life is in danger. So a child that doesn't have safety, it's virtually impossible for them to move forward, which is why their lives self-destruct, which is why I mentioned at the beginning that at-risk behavior, when you see children who just can't function and run away from home or are self-destructing, there's usually a very good answer key for that. And very often, it's the lack of security.
So you're saying a diminishment of the child's functionality level, it should be in a warning sign to parents, or rage, I guess depression would also be some type of a diminishment mm-hmm. of their functionality.
Right. And again, parents, look, education is so powerful, does it? I've always felt this way. And you know, there's so many, especially with the Internet, there's so many good resources out there. A simple Google search will get you free material on any topic. So, you know, if parents are concerned that the children may have, been exposed to or traumatized in some way, you do a Google search and look what the reasons are. Now, I just want to go to I didn't speak education at all, but I think that this is a huge component. Undiagnosed learning disability is definitely on the top 5, in my opinion, meaning children that have a learning disability of some sort and nobody ever knew about it and nobody knew how to deal with it. It's the flexibility of the parents and the school to realize that what worked for Reuven and Shimon is not going to work for Levi in terms of a child who has ADD or a child who has just difficulty, or like a creative kid we were talking earlier. Gemara Be'ian might not work for them, you know, learning Gemara in depth, especially for so many hours a day. So, you know, looking into the learning profiles of children and trying to understand them and help them get an educational path, you have parents try to push children into high schools that clearly many, I see this so many times, parents, for all the right reasons, we want the best for our kids. But putting them in a situation where that the school is just not right for them, it's a disaster. It's just a disaster of the highest order.
Now, we had Rabbi Binyamin Ginsberg on, and he suggested in one of the primary reasons why children leave. Yeah.
Right. No, that would be in ADD. There's attention deficit disorder. Excuse me, attention deficit disorder. There are two kinds of ADD. One is the sleepy kind, they call it, without the H, where you have a child who's sitting quietly in the corner and they're just dreaming. They're just a dreamer, and they, you know, they tend to forget things, and they, but they're off in their own little world. Fagoilant, as we would say in Yiddish, they're just zoned out. And then ADHD is with the hyperactivity, so you notice them. You can close an eye as a teacher if you're not trained and you're not doing a good job. You could not notice that there's a kid who has the sleeper ADD without the H because they're not bothering you. The H, you know they're there, okay? So I call it like off the derech, OTD. I don't like the term, by the way. I really don't like this term, off the derech. I don't like using it. But off the derech, there's off the derech without the H and there's off the derech with the H, okay? So with the H, meaning that they're acting out and they're not observing religion in a very public way, and they're in your face about it, so everybody knows about them. What you're describing, the hypocrisy, is without the H. You have kids off the derech, you wouldn't know about it. They're quiet. They don't talk about it. But inside, they notice things that aren't correct. I would not consider hypocrisy one of the top five reasons. I don't even know if I put it in the top 10.
What about, well, so that's interesting, two mechanchim disagreeing with each other, which is healthy.
Hey, listen.
That's healthy.
I disagreement is great. Of course
I think it's healthy. If we have conversation, you know, creates discussion, and rather than assuming there's some type of a blanket way to deal with everything, it allows for disagreement, which allows for unfolding of the mind and looking for new, you know, solutions, et cetera. I think that's fantastic.
Right. And again, understand perspective. I Binyamin is a dear friend of mine. We studied at a Torah Masorah principles training program 20 years ago for three summers. We're really good friends. I don't believe that people approach him with really high-end, you know, I don't know how many abuse or trauma cases he deals with. So that, you know, from his perspective, if somebody's coming, you know, it also has to do with what people deal with. And again, maybe my view is slanted because I deal so much with people who are in trauma.
So I have a question here from Sharon from Flatbush. She says, I'm a teacher in high school, and we have a number of girls who have, quote unquote, gone OTD. And for most reason is because of lack of faith. They question things like the Mabel and creationism and evolution, etc. Do you believe that this is really what's driving it? And is it coming from an intellectual, or is that just an excuse and it's really coming from something deeper that I just don't grasp?
I think her observation is probably true. And an accelerator to that whole phenomenon is the internet. And I think it's extremely important that we get real and understand that whatever we're teaching our children is going to be subjected to analysis. Okay? So if we, whatever we're teaching them when they're in our classrooms, sooner or later, they're going to get an email saying, hey, the Mabel didn't happen. There's no scientific evidence, da-da-da-da, right?
Can I just interplead here, Rabbi Horowitz? I think that
sure.
that the way we're approaching the internet, you know, such as the bans. I know that Rabbi Waxman came out. He said, if you go on the internet, you have no chelik, le'olam haba, etc. I think I respectfully question whether that's the right way. The internet is a reality, and the internet is a threat. And to make believe that it doesn't exist, or we could bury our children's head in the sands, I don't know if that's realistic, given the advent of smartphones. And we are, you know, there's recently been...
Let me just add on a thought, okay?
You know, there's a story, an Amoritz, an ignoramus, came to the Lechavitcher, and he was learning Parshas Noach, and he said, Boy ata v'ishtecho banecha el hateva. So he was ignorant, and he asked the Rebbe, he said, take you, your wife, and your children into the word. He said, Teva, which means in Hebrew means the box, the ark, and also, he said, how did Noach fit his wife, his children, himself into a word? Mm-hmm. And the Lechavitch just smiled, and he said, ah, that's such a brilliant question. And he turned to the fellow, and he said, you know, when difficult times come, as it certainly was by Noach and the Teva, was one of the worst eras in humanity, he said, the way to hold on to those we love is by entering into a dialogue with them. Go into the word.
That's good.
He said, without the dialogue, you will lose them. And I think the internet is something...
Right. And, you know, I've always been, David, you know, I've always been opposed to these, overarching bans, and I didn't do it in our own school. We've had a policy, so to speak, you know, meaning that don't encourage parents to be less than truthful with us. Internet in the public area with a parent next to you. You know, I'll tell you how I think of the internet. And again, if any of you readers are interested, the articles are all free on my website. I wrote a series in Mishpacha about 5-6 articles called Walmart is Coming. Walmart is Coming. And I gave a mushel, an analogy of you have this little small town with a little main street shopping area and, you know, mom and pop hardware stores and all the like. And all of a sudden, they find out that Walmart's moving 10 miles down the road. And how they did, but by the way, there are a few books written about the subject of how communities
dealing with Walmart as a retailer. Yeah. Rabbi Horowitz, we have 1 minute, so finish your thought. You have 1 minute.
Oh, okay. So basically, the analogy was that people that were realistic, a new Walmart is coming, and they spruced up the downtown area. They got it. You know, they did things to address it. They survived, and the ones who had their head in the sand didn't. And I wrote that the internet is a Walmart of ideas. Until now, we were able to keep our kids in a mom-and-pop setting. Now, all of a sudden, we got this behemoth down the road, and every single thing that we're teaching them is going to, like I said earlier, is going to be subject to a review, so to speak, and a challenge. And I think that's what we need to teach differently. We need to teach assuming that the children are going to challenge and deal with the questions in advance in an area where they're prepared when they go out into the world.
Well, Rabbi, we're speaking to Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz. We have to conclude. This is obviously a broad topic. I have around 10 emails here from people that we will not be able to get to him with. Rabbi Horowitz, it's an honor and a privilege to have you, and we hope to have you on another time on this burning and very current and contemporary topic. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank both of our guests for appearing tonight, and it's really timely because we're coming up on Pesach, where the topic is the Arba Banim, the four children, and how to deal with each one of these sons. And clearly, what do we love in life more than our children? The answer is probably nothing. So rather than sweeping these issues under the rug, it's so important to discuss them and listen to these expert educators and get what ideas can I glean from them so that we, as Zeichet, have more nachas from our children. Next week on WMCA, we will not be on the air because Shuvu is doing a siyum that will go late into the night, and we've acquiesced. It's such an incredible program that they have, we've acquiesced to them. However, we will be on the Nachum Segal Network, and the topic will be discussing Agunis. We will have Rabbi David Cohn and Reish Besdin of the RCA in Chicago to discuss this very sensitive and painful topic. I look forward to speaking to you then. Kol Tov, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.